Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, the podcast that dives deep into the heart of the mortgage industry. Your host, David Lickin', bringing you the latest insights, trends, and updates from the world of mortgages. Whether you're a seasoned industry veteran or just getting started, this show is your go-to source for all things mortgage. On Lickin' on Lending, we're not just about delivering information, we're about delivering it in a way that's lively, engaging, and yes, even entertaining. You'll hear from a wide range of regular contributors, experts who make the complexities of the mortgage business not just understandable, but enjoyable. Our goal? To keep you informed on the operational aspects of the industry. Everything from regulations and compliance to technology and market trends. Without ever being boring. We believe that staying up to date doesn't have to be dull, and our interactive conversational style ensures you'll be hooked from the get-go. So get ready for detailed discussions, lively debates, and a wealth of knowledge that will help you navigate the ever-changing landscape of the mortgage industry. Let's get started. This is Lickin' on Lending. Now your host, David Lickin'.
Welcome, everybody. Watch everyone's feedback on our new opening. We're getting some good feedback, mostly good. One person said, it's too long. You know what? Yeah, maybe just a little bit, but it's good. I love that intro. It's got the energy, and it really communicates what we're about. And I think it's so good to say it because I like to have that said at the beginning, because what we're about is really helping you become better educated on all that's going on in the industry. And we've got some really interesting topics we're talking about today. Again, this is Monday, June 17th, day after Father's Day. Hope you all had a great Father's Day. I did. It was low key. Kids everywhere else, grandkids elsewhere, but so much fun to have family, and we value them. Again, this podcast is like a family. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we are so grateful to have you as our listener. Our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. We're grateful to have with us today Adam DeSantis with his recorded comment, Les Parker, always insightful with the music parody, Matt Graham with his kind of Dr. Friday approach, the dry as heck it can be, but really good in market insights. David Kittle here with his unique perspective on what's going on in the markets, as well as Alice Alvey, legislative update. Alan Pollack is here with a tech update. And Bill Corbett and Mark Helmar joining us, as always, giving us wonderful color and commentary as we discuss all the things that are happening out there. Let's go through our sponsors real quickly. Very grateful for our sponsors. Byte Software, which provides an exceptional level of LOS customization that allows you to work the way you want to work rather than the vendor wants you to work. Whether you're a COO managing thousands of users or an entrepreneur just starting up, nothing quite like the vision and system of Byte Software. I encourage you to check it out. Also, Finastra, the leading market provider when it comes to sales and origination platforms. They are also the number one fintech company in the world. Also, Lender Homepage. I love what these guys are doing. They make it so easy for LOs to create winning automated campaigns that allow you to connect with the consumer in a much more meaningful way. They simplify all of their tech into one professional branded solution. It's really good. We're going to be talking to Rocky and Quay of Lender Homepage in an upcoming interviews. Also True, I was just on with Richard and talking to them. I was with Jody Hall and did an interview with Richard last week. Really insightful what they are doing and planning. Again, just taking the world by storm. Their income and employment verification is becoming the industry leader in the marketplace, displacing the current or previous leader because their costs are 80% less than the other leader. And they support 90% of the U.S. workforce. Also, Angel AI, mortgage lending process reimagined using AI, what Pavan and his team have done over the last 30 years, perfecting it. This is not a bunch of people working behind a curtain calling it AI. This is the real thing. This is true AI, and it's the most advanced of anything that is out there. I encourage you to check out. Go to getangel.ai. Start using it for free. Again, I stress, this is something you can download and use for free to help structuring your deals. We're finding more and more people doing so. Also, Candid, it's the only mortgage marketing and sales ecosystem built for the modern loan originator, and it is one of the most popular with MLOs in the market right now. Also, a special thank you goes out to the MBA. So grateful for all that they're doing for us. And we're also grateful to have two co-ops as sponsors, the Mortgage Collaborative, TMC, represented by David Kittle, as well as Lenders One. We also have two business intelligence technologies, Mobility MMI and Modix, that you are must get if you're going to operate with any amount of intelligence of what's going on in the market, whether it's getting insights into realtors or MLOs that are performing. Mortgage loan originators, for those of you who are listening outside of the industry, that's when we say MLOs, mortgage loan originators. Also, industry's number one LMS is the Knowledge Coop. Grateful for Ken Perry and his relationship with this podcast. Last Wednesday, we released an episode with Dale Larson, the third of Modix. The topic was the future of mortgage employment, navigating the new normal. Really got some real insights into what their perspective is with Modix. Again, they provide the business intelligence. They are a sponsor of our podcast, and I just love what the vision is and what they're doing. This week, we have Richard Greiser and Jody Hall, the interview I mentioned earlier that we recorded last week with Truth, and the topic is the difference between a successful rollout of new technology. I've got several clients say, hurry up, get that out. We need to have some help on how to have a successful rollout. Alan, you'd find that one interesting. Wish you had been there with me on that interview. It would have been really good.
My middle name is Rollout.
Your middle name is Successful Rollout. I love that. Yeah, I don't doubt it. You have done a few rollouts, haven't you, in your career? That's hilarious. I love it. Also, I want to get out and just say a big thank you to every one of our contributors. And let's start off with Adam DeSantis, Mortgage Minute from the MBA. Adam, what do you have for us today?
Hi, I'm Adam DeSantis. This is the Mortgage Minute, the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. The Department of Veterans Affairs last week released a circular that creates a temporary local variance for charges related to buyer broker compensation. As you know, veterans are typically prohibited from paying for buyer broker charges. However, after coordinated advocacy from MBA, NAR, and other industry groups since the beginning of this year, the VA now agrees these changes are necessary for veterans to remain competitive buyers, given the potential changes to buyer broker compensation practices resulting from the recent NAR settlement. The VA will now allow veteran buyers to pay reasonable and customary amounts if they are in an area where listing brokers cannot set commission compensation through a multiple listing service, or the listing broker cannot pay for the buyer broker compensation, and as long as these charges are not included in the loan amount. The VA circular is a stopgap measure in advance of any permanent policy changes and goes into effect on August 10th of this year. MBA will keep members informed of any updates from the VA on this issue. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Adam. Appreciate it. Appreciate that. We got these updates on that one particularly is very important. Love to get some commentary from Alice and the rest of the group in just a minute. We're going to get on to a couple other segments. But before we do, I want to say a special attention to the Mortgage Action Alliance app. This is where you can download it on your smartphone. You do not have to be a member of the MBA to do so. You can have your voice heard on the Hill. Directly. It's not like it goes through the MBA. It's you have a direct connection to your representatives on the Hill. It's something that Mr. Kittle was just back doing in person with a group of, how many did you bring back there? Was it 17 or something like that, David? 20?
16 lenders and 3 staff members.
That's so good. And it's so important that we be doing that. And again, your voice, not the MBA's filtered voice, but your voice can be heard on the Hill by using the Mortgage Action Alliance app. Thank you, MBA. Appreciate your support. Thank you, Adam DeSantis. Now let's get over to Les Parker with the TM Spotlight and his macro view of the markets, which always comes with a music parody. What does he have for us today?
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
Bears, this is the end. Bulls rise up again to reign. They had to take the trend away. Bond Barracuda kept the Fed in line, resulting in a new bull market. Long term, look for the 10-year yield to stay below 5% and mortgage rates to stay below 7.75%. Imagine a sub 6% 30-year mortgage by year end and the 10-year falling below 3.5%. Global political and financial uncertainty continue to pressure the Fed to keep the system liquid. This outlook is inflation's going to burn to the wick. Bond Barracuda. These views are mine. Oh, yeah.
Know the Barracuda at tmspotlight.com.
Yeah, it's got some lively music. Bond Barracuda. Can't wait to get into that discussion with Mr. Corbett and Mr. Kittle and the whole team here in just a minute. That's pretty good. Anyway, be sure to sign up for Les Parker's TM Spotlight newsletter. You can do so by going to tmspotlight.com. And you can also get the paid version for free if you put in the word power for Power Seller. It's a great newsletter. I read it daily, and I recommend you do so as well. Let's get over to Matt Graham, the founder and CEO of MBS Live. He is here with this week's market update. Matt, what do you have for us today?
This is Matt Graham with the MBS Live market update. Last week was hotly anticipated, to say the least, coming off the previous week's super strong jobs report numbers and the associated bond market sell-off. Traders were waiting for CPI and the Fed, the Consumer Price Index, to have the final say as to whether or not rates should be heading higher or holding steady, possibly moving lower. As it turns out, the vote was to hold steady and move lower when CPI, especially month-over-month core CPI, came in at 0.2 versus a 0.3 forecast. Moreover, that number is unrounded at its most basic level, and that unrounded number was 0.163, which, if multiplied by 12, would give us the 2% annual inflation target. Of course, we need 12 months of that to actually pan out before inflation is officially at the 2% target. But when these individual months of on-target inflation happen, and especially when they happen in such a perfect way that is either at or below 2%, it is one of those things that increases the Fed's confidence that they'll be able to deliver rate cuts in 2024. They still see themselves doing that, but at a slower clip than the previous Fed projections indicated. The summary of economic projections is released on 4 out of the 8 Fed meetings each year. This was one of them. So later that same day on Wednesday, when the Fed's summary came out, it showed the rate cut expectations falling to once in 2024, as opposed to 3 times in the previous report back in March. But there's a little bit of a nuance to that, because it's not as if they get together and decide on one consensus number. They submit all of their projections as individuals represented in a dot plot, and those dots are sort of all over the map. So one could say, well, the median dot last time called for 3 rate cuts in 2024. It was more like 2 to 3 rate cuts if you were looking at the distribution of the dots. And while the current dot plot only calls for 1, you could say it's 1 to 2 cuts, depending on how things go. The other consideration here is that the data came out very close to the dot plot. And while the Fed members do have the ability to revise their dots right up until they are reported, Fed Chair Powell reminded the market that only some of the Fed members actually do that, and most do not. Therefore, what we can assume is that if the Fed had updated their dots in response to CPI, they likely would have indicated 2 rate cuts as opposed to 1. Not that that really matters, because it has more to do with the data that's going to come out in the next month or two, and less to do with the Fed's dots when it comes to deciding where rates are going to go. Another layer of intrigue came the following morning, with the producer price index coming in much, much lower than expected, 0.0 versus a 0.3 forecast at the core level, and it was accompanied by a higher jobless claims number. Both of those things also likely would have factored into Fed member decisions as to where they were going to place their dot for the appropriate level of the Fed funds rate by the end of the year and the next few years. Speaking of that, while the Fed does see 2025 ending at a slightly higher rate than it did back in March, 2026 is seen at the same rate as it was in March. From here, we are waiting for relevant economic data, as has been and continues to be the case. The jobless claims number last Thursday was interesting, because at 242 versus a median forecast of 225, it was the highest reading in nearly a year and could signal a potential shift in the labor market. The counterpoint to that is that there is some suspicion or doubt that the seasonal adjustment factors might be a little bit out of whack in that data, because we did see arguably some of the typical seasonal patterns bleed through into the adjusted numbers last year. And now this year's spike is happening with the exact same timing as that. We won't really know if it's a legitimate uptick in jobless claims or if it is an out of whack seasonal until August, which is when those seasonal adjustment factors would normally bring the claims level back down. Looking ahead, economic data this week is in lighter supply than last week, but we do have the important retail sales report coming out tomorrow morning, a 20-year bond auction, multiple Fed speakers, and then a full market closure on Wednesday for Juneteenth. Back in the office on Thursday for building permits, housing starts, jobless claims, Philly Fed index, and more. Fed speakers Friday ends with S&P Global's manufacturing and services indices. Both have been pretty significant market movers recently. And then rounding things out is existing home sales and leading economic indicators at 10 a.m. The balance of that data is nowhere near on the same level as the data we had last week, but taken together definitely has the power to either reinvigorate the recent downtrend in rates or to give it pause and make rates sort of go sideways until they get the really meaningful data that tends to come out in the first and second week of any given month. That's going to do it for this week. Back to you.
Thank you much. Appreciate that very much, Matt Graham. Be sure to get signed up for Matt Graham's MBSLive.net. It's up to date information, something you can't live without. I have it behind me on my screen, and it is something I'm referencing throughout the day. Also, there's so much information, some of the commentary, the way you can access what's going on. He simulates all of the news and puts it up on there so you see what's going on with CNN, any of the other news stories that are significant to moving the markets. It's just a must-have that you do. Anyway, so good to have that. Let's get over and get some commentary on this. Bill Corbett, we always like starting off with your insights. So take it away from Les's bond market. I'm thinking it's interesting. I totally forgot that Wednesday where markets are closed.
Markets are closed on Wednesday. And I want to start off with actually a headline that just came over on MBS Live. Right, that points out to me the insanity, if you will, of where we are. So his comment from one of the Fed governors, and the long-term stubbornness of shelter inflation remains a concern. But of course, the shelter inflation is driven by the higher rates.
Yes.
So I feel like back when we were growing up, a bunch of kids at a playground with the merry-go-round is going round and round and nobody can figure out how to get on or off it. I also think that one of the things I wanted to highlight, two things that Matt had talked about, right? One is, again, folks are talking more and more about the unrounded data, trying to will the market to improve going, well, 0.2, but if you unround it, it's 0.163, which is even better. But the other important thing that he talked about with have a rally, things go sideways for a while, and that I believe rates are going to continue to move lower. I'm not sure I'm totally in Les's camp as to where they're going to wind up, but they're going to move in steps. And we've seen that where we got some improvement.
That's improvement.
Now things seem to stabilize, sold off a little bit. Probably those kind of patterns are going to continue. Because, again, to Matt's point, there's really only certain data that's going to significantly move the market.
Are we seeing today's market move where it's just slightly higher than we saw the close of Friday? Is that the result of the coming Juneteenth one-day holiday interruption? People go conservative in case something goes on, so they have a tendency to trade up and out. Will we see that tendency and then see the market improve possibly on Thursday and Friday back when the markets are open and we're dealing with data?
It could be. It may take longer than just a week again. I think that's a step pattern. And when you get a significant rally, to get a bit of a pullback is not at all a surprise.
Yeah, very good. Mr. Kittle, thoughts?
I'm totally in Bill's camp. It just doesn't make sense. I believe it was Les that said it. He was expecting the Fed to flood the market with liquidity. That sounds like higher inflation to me.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Well, it is inflationary. If you start flooding liquidity, you print money. It's inflationary, and that's the very thing they're trying to fight. And they use the anyway. It just the illogic. It just it's
to flood it's it like with liquidity
you,
with
you
money.
You want to become sober, so you're drinking less. Yeah, you want to become sober, so you drink less. Yeah, you drink more.
You don't have the money to flood the liquidity, the market with liquidity, but yet that's what they're thinking about doing.
Yeah,
and
insane.
You know, I've said it all. You can go back for over a year. That if the Fed would prove itself to be political, if it lowered rates, not meeting its inflation target.
Yeah. Let's get over to Alice and get her reflection, then Mark, and then Alan jump in. Alice, thoughts?
I'm just going to go with how your intro now talks about comedy. As Matt was talking about placing the dot over and over again, my mind kept thinking, throwing the dart. As opposed to placing a dot. I'm wondering what that segment would sound like if we said, what if we're throwing a dart at where everybody landed at the Fed instead of a dot? I was picturing this dartboard. So that's what I feel like we're doing right now. They're just throwing darts, and we just got to make sure you don't stand in the way.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah. Mark, your thoughts?
Yeah, I got a big one, but it'll be real quick. I'm so sick and tired about talking about this. Not with us, but just in people in general, and everybody say what's happening to mortgage rates and why is it happening and all that stuff. And it's great that the Fed's in control of this. There's got to be some traffic cop out there somewhere. But also, the thing that really bothers me, and maybe I'm the only one in the country that feels this way, but I don't think so. I think both the Davids on the phone call feel the same way I do about this. But we got to stop pushing down the road and the conversation we have about what's happening. And think about where the heck this came from. All this stuff has come from the fact that we've had uncontrolled spending in this country for so long that you can't fix it by the Fed playing with rates. You can't fix it. It's just mirrors out there we're dealing with. Every time, if you look at any legislative conference we have in Washington, D.C., and you see the bills that they passed, and you read of them, 99% of them are BS because they're just appeasing a subset of citizens back in their district. And they got everybody to buy into it because every one of those guys has a couple things like that they have to approve. That's where the problem is. It's not with the Fed. The Fed's trying to make something out of nothing and not getting any help at all from Congress in controlling spending. So I don't know. I get so frustrated talking about it that I don't know the answer. I don't know what a good answer is other than fire everybody in Washington, D.C. and start all over.
I've got an answer. I'm going to get into it, but I'm going to talk briefly about it. Alan, any thoughts you have?
Yeah, I think this is like going to a used car sales lot. And I think that because it's an election year and we have some of the worst political conversations going on, that the market is going to be used as leverage, including mortgage rates and cuts. And we are the guinea pigs and we just have to deal with it. And I don't like the situation at all. And that's the best advice or opinion, personal opinion I can provide.
Yep. The reality is we are in an election year. And one of the things that I've been listening to over the weekend, I'm a junkie on podcasts. I love listening to podcasts and going on what's going on. And I've been hearing a reoccurring theme. We need to do away with the Fed. And I'm going, oh my gosh. And the first time I run that by Parker, Les Parker goes, that's crazy talk. There's no way that the Fed's going to be, how would we do this? How would we do that? And I think it's because we're also locked into a Fed policy. It's been here all of my 50 plus years in the industry. We've been dealing with talking. We've been talking about the Fed. What's the Fed going to do? What do they think about this? And yet they have become the problem, in my opinion. And what's really interesting about that, so I brought that up with Les again recently. I said, Les, I'm hearing more and more. I'm literally at a strong sense. I don't know why necessarily. Maybe it's because I listen to too many podcasts on it that are echo this. But it is, I see a world without the Federal Reserve. And he says, do you realize that? He says, this time he wasn't. He says, Dave, do you realize that's one of the planks in Trump's platform, love him or hate him, not trying to get political here. We're in a political year, so it's hard not to talk about that. But if he were to be elected, that is one of the top things on his agenda is to eliminate the Fed, which goes back to other things that are being said about what the Fed Reserve does. It was moved under the Trump administration in under the Treasury, and that would be a very convenient way for it to be then dissolved if, in fact, that is. What comes in place of that? I'm listening to podcasts about that. That's a whole nother discussion. We're going to be doing a hot topic segment on that. Again, I really appreciate every feedback. Dave, I love the fact that you guys do your best to stay apolitical. In other words, out of the politics. We're in a political year. It's one of those things we have to talk about the pros and cons of either administration on this. I think we've got some real interesting surprises coming up ahead of us this year yet as we get closer to this election. When you see President Obama on stage with Biden and Obama has to help him off stage, I think the Dems are got to be nervous as heck, and they're going to be looking at who can we put up. I'm not going to be surprised that we're not going to see Gavin Newsom show up on the ballot at some point in time or someone like him, very articulate, good-looking guy. And so I think they got to figure out something to pull this out, because at this point, whether you love him or hate him, I think it's looking like a fairly foregone conclusion that a Trump presidency is going to happen. So I think we have to look at policies, whether you love him or hate him. You got to look at what are his policies. And one of the top policies is getting rid of the Fed. So that's why I bring it up. And hopefully I did that in a context without sounding too political, not trying to say it's good or not. Bill, you have a thought forming right there, I can tell.
Yeah. So without getting into opinions about getting rid of the Fed or not, I would say that any conversation in that space needs to go back to Mark's point first. You got to get spending under control, right?
Yeah.
And if you're sitting there debating what the Fed should do, what the Fed should look like, that's less time that's being spent solving the number one problem.
Which is the number one problem, yeah. And the Fed isn't spending the money.
Too much money.
It's our politicians that are spending the money. Policies that we're doing, that's where the spending is being done. That's a really good point. But I think what makes it inflationary, we've all talked about here, is the printing of money, the creation of money, which is directly in control of with the Federal Reserve. And I think that's what makes us all nervous and puts us in an inflationary trend, which Mr. Kittle pointed out. Mark, any got a thought?
No, I think you pretty much nailed it on target with everybody's saying, but I reiterate what I said, and Bill just endorsed it. We've got to quit spending, and I'm just tired of it, because when I read those things, there's, in my mind, and it's not political, it's both parties you're doing it.
Yeah,
it's not Democrat or Republican, it's both parties. And it is so self-serving what our congressmen and senators do, and it's stuff that should be borne by local governments and state governments, and many times, and not necessarily the federal government. If we got plenty of money, do those things. If we don't have plenty of money, quit spending.
Yep. Good message. Hope that gets heard in Washington, D.C. I'm not hopeful, but I am hopeful that something's going to happen with this election. And because we're coming to a point, I think we're going to see some really interesting things come to the surface, and some possibly some very dramatic, dynamic things happening before and after this election. So we'll leave it alone with that, unless anyone else has anything they want to add to it. We'll move on, because there is so much to talk about. Mr. Kittle, let's get on to some of the things that you were in Washington, D.C., and we talked a little bit about that last week. One of the questions that I had that someone listened to the podcast said, I wish you had asked Dave this, and I'm going to finally get a chance to ask it today, but when you were meeting there, what is the tone in D.C., David? Do you feel that they're listening? Or is it the political listen where, you know, what do you represent? What's your constituency? Do they really listen in an open heart and open mind? Your thoughts? That was a question from one of our listeners.
Well, I think we need to remember, and it's not hard to forget, that when you go see Fannie and Freddie, which we did, that they're owned by the government. So they're 100% political these days, where they used to be independent. Right? Every agency we saw, which is CFPB, FHFA, HUD, Ginnie Mae, Fannie, Freddie, they're all upbeat. But it's more regulation from the CFPB, not taking yet a position from HUD or FHFA on whether or not loan officers and the commission issue and the NAR settlement out there. There's no position on that whatsoever. And when you go to Fannie and Freddie, they both say that their repurchase requests are down. Clearly,
they're not. Absolutely not.
And same when they're up.
They say that while you're there, and then the next day the headline came out that they're substantially up. Is there something about inside the Beltway where you sort of like there is a disconnect with reality of what's being reported?
And remember,
either the reporters are reporting wrong, or their perception is out there.
There's avenues of advocacy up there. Okay, the ones what the MBA does mostly when they take you up there, they go see congressmen and senators, and you're represented by the PAC, and that's fine. We don't have a PAC, and we don't have lobbyists. Our lobbyists are members. When they go up there and they have their advocacy day, they take their constituents with them, and that's very powerful.
I
ran the PAC for 2 years. I get it. That's what you do. However, there's a difference to go see Congress, and the PAC is backing it up with a check on both sides of the aisle, than sitting and talking directly with the regulators on real issues. And we sat there without naming names on a repurchase request that was going to have the call on it the next week. And one thing was said about how the call was going to go, and they'd listen with an open mind on repurchasing this particular loan from a TMC member, loans 3 years old, paying on time. And the call went a 180 out from what they said. And they just completely denied it on a ridiculous point. And because they can.
Yeah.
And that's what you fight. So I will say one more thing. All right. One more thing on this. There is a need for it. I have no dog in this fight other than it's a friend of mine and yours, and they have it, and we have it inside the collaborative. Rep and warranty repurchase insurance is available.
Yes. Yeah.
You should have it. And Arthur Priestin does it.
Arthur Priestin does. It's real stuff, too. It's real insurance, and it really works.
If there was insurance on this loan, the loss would be substantially less than what it's going to be if we can't get the repurchase turned around.
It's absolutely spot on. You opened up the door for Alice because you talked about the regulators. And so let's get over to Alice Alvey, Vice President of Partner Education and Training at Union Home Mortgage. She's here with a legislative update. Alice, thank you so much for being here. And also for your partnership to this podcast for 15 years. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Oh, excuse me. You're welcome, Dave. Happy to be here. Just want to remind everybody, we've got Juneteenth coming up this week. So hopefully you have the opportunity to take some time and celebrate the meaning behind Juneteenth with the ending of slavery. So yes. The formal ending of slavery, finally, many years, I think it's 3 years after the actual date. Just wanted to make sure everyone recognizes that day. It's an important day. And then I want a quick follow-up to what Adam was reporting on the VA circular 262414, yes, where we now have the assurance from VA that they're going to move forward so that when August 10th does roll around, which is about when this settlement will go into play, we should be okay with our VA loans. One quick side point to add, though, is you're going to need a copy of that broker agreement in the file. In those cases, typically we don't get that in our loan files. So keep in mind, that's probably going to get triggered or is triggered on your VA loan. Just when we need more paper. One other update that I'm going to give you is on the CFPB. They have posted this notice of proposed rulemaking to the prohibition on creditors and consumer reporting agencies concerning medical information. They have been working on this a long time. We've talked about different bits and pieces of this that have come out over the last several years. So they now finally have this proposed rule. You have ability to comment up until August 12th. And then they will close that down and probably just move forward with implementing it anyway, regardless of what the comments might be, because it is considered pretty consumer friendly. I did not mean that as a slam against CFPB. I know they will do their due diligence. Yeah. But for folks who don't know where we're at today, when you have a medical collection account, as of March 31st of 2023, those are no longer reported on your credit report if it's under $500. And then for larger collections, medical providers don't typically report to a collection agency. And right, it doesn't happen until the provider actually passes it off to some type of collection agency, which could be whatever that provider's window is, 30, 60, 120 days. It's delinquent. Then they'll send it to a collection agency. And then from there, the credit bureau, so Experian, Equifax, TransUnion, they won't report it for 1 year. So you really have that kind of a lag before something, first of all, hits your credit report. So that's where we're at today. And what the CFPB is proposing is that medical collections are just not reportable ever under any circumstance. They don't go on the credit report. I think a lot of people find that very appealing. MBA pointed out that as lenders, we may feel like we have a bit of a blind spot on that. I have not had a chance to read the research that CFPB is citing. They're citing two different reports, but they sponsored one of them. So okay. I'm always a little, I like unbiased studies, and I haven't had a chance to dissect them at all to see if those studies really do support that leaving the medical collections off won't leave us with a blind spot in someone's ability to repay. I think it's going to happen. And as lenders, we'll just have to try and find a way to, I don't know how we can watch that because it won't be on the report. So once it's gone, and then we'll have to watch things from there. So you have till August 12th to comment if you have strong opinions on that.
It is. And we should be commenting. For those that hear these kind of things, we should be commenting. And I thank you for the reminders that you give us, Alice. How do they comment again? Refresh everyone's memory on how do they go in and comment? I know we got Mortgage Action Alliance. You could do that through the MBA. But also CFPB has their websites and they can
do. Yeah, when you go to the CFPB website, you can see under rules, they'll have this one listed under their proposed rules. And right there, you can see all the different ways that you can respond. You can also use your favorite search engine and just type in this particular proposal. Just if you say CFPB, Consumer Reporting Agencies Concerning Medical Information, it'll come up, take you straight to the CFPB website, and it can show you the multiple ways. You can just simply post directly from their website. Or if you like old school and you want to mail a letter, you know what? You can still do that too.
Amazing. Hard to believe anyone still does that. Yeah.
Who's got stamps? I don't know. Who's got stamps? Find a stamp.
I bought some of these forever stamps. Then I looked back at what I paid for them. They're half of the cost of what they are now. I bought it so long. I just don't do much in the way of mail. Mr. Kittle's holding
Dave
up his
Kittle's
forever
stamps.
He's got his stamps, folks. There he goes. Yeah. We're all on a Zoom call looking at each other, even though you're listening to this on audio basis. Good job.
Hey, I still send out handwritten note cards
You know, that is so good. I got a handwritten comment from Dan Archibald of Total Expert the other day because I helped him close on a deal. And I got a handwritten note. And I remember when I get those, I go, dang, Brittany Hodak does that also. And they're so impactful when I actually get something in writing like that. We got a few listeners that will send in comments. Almost 99.999% of everything we receive is so positive about the podcast. And so I really appreciate that. So however you want to do that, it's good. Thank you, Alice, for the reminder. We can still write if you're so inclined.
Yeah. And don't forget, if you're going to send a letter to somebody who's in Gen Z, you better print, because that's the generation that didn't learn cursive. So
yes, that's a great point. That is a
I have that with
point.
My nieces and nephews, my younger ones.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I'm a cursive writer and I do my journaling. I do it all in cursive. And it's something about connecting, something about a pen to paper, and actually journaling and doing so in a cursive manner connects your brain to your subconscious and your heart a little bit better, and some things pour out. It's really interesting studies coming out on that. So they're trying to get cursive writing back introduced to that. So
nice. I'm a fan of that.
Me too.
I'll vote for that.
I'll vote for that. Also, I want to say something. You mentioned CFPB and something that I think I'm on a phone call every Friday with Taylor Stork and Greg Scher, and we talk about some of the issues. And Taylor Stork knows Chopra, is in his office regularly. Not like he knows him personally, like they're best friends or anything. But Chopra reminded him last time he was in there. Taylor is the guy that works with CHLA and is a part of that. And I think he's the president of it. And he was in there, and Chopra says, you know what? Just go take a look at the number of enforcement actions under my leadership as opposed to my predecessor's leadership. It's the lowest number of enforcement actions. Now, we're hearing rumors that they're going to step it up now that they have the Supreme Court ruling behind them on their funding. We shall see, but I hope that stays the case. Chopra, keep it low. Go after what's significant, but keep it low. Thank you, Alice, Albie, so much for your updates. You could go listen to the Lincoln on Lending website. If you say, boy, I like that, there's so much good stuff, go to the Lincoln on Lending website. You can binge on Alice by listening to all of her comments. All right, let's get over to Alan Pollock with the tech update. Alan, when I did that last interview with Jody and Richard of True, I was thinking, where's Alan? I got to get involved in some of these interviews because it was really good, especially in the topic we talked about, which had to do is how to do a better job of implementing. It's pretty significant. Anyway, implementing technology.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rolling out. Mr. Rollout. So you're Mr. Rollout.
Mr. Rollout. I can comment to that in a moment about the rollout because I think part of my segment today will go there. Let's talk about a couple quick things. I found this data, which I thought was pretty interesting. So get this. Apple just announced that they are releasing all these updates, right? New iOS systems, new Mac, new iPad. And people are online saying, if your wife is cheating on you, these apps or these new changes will make it very easy for people to figure that out. Get this. There's a guy. He's in the UK. He is suing Apple for $6.3 million, which is the cost of his divorce. He blames Apple for his deleted text that synced to his wife's iMac. So they have a shared iMac. That's how his wife learned that they were cheating. So I don't, I doubt that lawsuit will ever go through, but you build an app and you get sued for everything. And by the way, this is an interesting little tidbit because I've got two startups that I'm involved in. One of them is an app. It's not in the mortgage industry, but what I learned is how the Apple and Google store have a monopoly over the apps that are in those stores and the ability to pay for things in those apps. So if you have an app in those stores, this is why we don't see a lot of mortgage apps. I'm going to tell you why. It's going to be really interesting. You have to pay 30% to those stores. You're paying 30% to Apple, 30% to Google, and you are forbidden from having any way to charge people for usage of your app outside of your app, unless it's a digital, a physical product. So any services or digital products have to go through. Now, obviously, there's probably a couple caveats, but they take 30%. Then in the mortgage industry, if you want to connect it to certain systems in order to provide workflow functionality, it's another 30%. So 60% of your revenue is going out the door before you even bring a dollar in.
Wow. And
that's probably one of the main reasons why we don't see a lot of apps in our industry. Now, there's probably apps that will provide functionality that you don't have to pay for, but I just learned that. Oh, I'm going through building an app for the different stores and the financial model that's supported around it. So it's very interesting. But let's get over now to two other topics in the mortgage side. One's actually real estate, but it has to do with chatbots. So the first one, David, this is a company called AIRE. They're a NASDAQ company. That's AIRE, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. And the name of the company just launched a chatbot called Claire. It's a generative AI chatbot. They're saying it's powered based on zero commission buyer agents. So what you're trying to do is replace the missing link they're saying is going to disappear. And what they do is they provide home buyers. You ready for this? Every step of the journey from property search to closing the deal supports 24/7 online. Claire will make the home buying process more efficient, enjoyable, and cost effective or efficient. It matches buyers with their dream homes using over 400 data attributes. Think about where it's getting the data from. And provides insights into market trends and property values. So here's the thing, mortgage lenders. Get on the phone, get someone in your business development department, and go connect with these guys. They need
mortgages.
What
is that against Claire?
Doesn't mention anything about mortgage.
Could you give us the web address one more time?
Yes, it's Claire, C-L-A-I-R-E. And the company, the NASDAQ name is AIRE, A-I-R-E. And that's all you need. Use that and you can search. Oh, the actual company's name is ReAlpha. So it's lowercase R-E and then capital A-L-P-H-A. And they just developed and released Claire. So you may want to reach out. Somebody, the first one to make that phone call, ready, one, two, three, go. You'll be able to figure out if that's something useful. All right, so David, the topic I wanted to talk about, and I'm going to bring up the implementations. What I was going to talk about is I was on the phone with a gentleman the other day, a friend of mine at a large credit union, and he listens to our podcast, so he's going to hear this. There's a challenge in our industry where people say you need an all-in-one system. But the reality is that all-in-one systems could, depending on who you are as a customer, not everybody, hold you back. They can keep you from being able to integrate with innovative solutions or partners. They tie you to a roadmap. They put you in a position where you're forced to leverage only what they have. So you have to decide when you're looking at your tech stack, are you looking for an all-in-one solution? Does that fit your business model? Or are you looking based on market changes to be nimble and to make changes and try new things out to mitigate your risk with one or two different vendors? And so that also goes straight along with the implementation component. Every time you need a change, you have a roadmap that has many other products built into it compared to a company that jack of all trades, master of none. So you've got somebody who maybe they're a master at a lot of things, but they could, and again, this is not for everybody, it's for certain people, tied down to specifically a roadmap that covers everything they do rather than focus on just what you need, which is what that company provides. And then lastly, what does it take to implement it? How much workflow, how much change, how much impact to all the other departments that you have, how much impact to training, the cost for consultants, all those different things. So I know we've talked about these things briefly. Today's just a quick brush on the surface, but keep that in mind as you're looking at your tech stock. Think about what your future looks like, not just today. Obviously, the financial aspect of it is a big deal, but do you need a vendor that's nimble, or are you going to set up once and you're happy with what they have because they've got a best practice that you want to adopt? And that's it for today, David.
It's good. Good stuff, Alan. Any thoughts as we go through? Alice has already had to go off to a meeting. Mr. Kittle, anything you have as we wrap this up?
No, that was a good conversation today. We really didn't get into it earlier, but the employment number last week, not a high percentage, but a pretty hefty percentage of that was government jobs.
I know. Exactly right. Yeah. And
that's, we've had,
we, in we, fact,
we've had, I'm laughing, Mr. Kettle. Big surprise there.
Yeah. So that's nothing but overhead. And so they'll revise the number down whenever they do it in the next few days, but none of those government jobs will be revised down. Pretty robust jobs number. Yeah. Let's dissect that.
That's that. Bill, you had a one of those Bill Corbett looks in your eye as you heard that.
No, the government component of that, right? Mr. Kittle's been on that bandwagon for quite a while, correctly. And then when you look at the other components that are up, those are not the high-paying economic growth type generating jobs. You know, you only have to scratch below the headline number to see that it's not all it's cracked up to be.
Yeah, nope. It's all spin, isn't it?
Yep. It is.
We could go on and on about that. We got to wrap it up there. My wife just sent me a Fox article. It says, brace yourself, a 2008 mortgage crisis may be set off by this crazy Biden scheme is what the headline says. So you can consider the source, Fox, big conservative, more conservative anyway. Check out the article there. I'll put a link to it. But we got some things heading up. We're in a precarious situation, listeners, and that's why we're so grateful for you to be here. We try to do our best to weave that, the thread, the needle, where we're staying apolitical. But how can you stay there when we are hearing, seeing some of the crazy things we are? But anyway, need to make your voice heard. Get the Mortgage Action Alliance app. Thank you, everyone. I want to say a special thank you again to Adam, Les, Matt, David, Alice, Alan, Bill, and Mark. It's always so fun to have you join in, and I appreciate it. Special also thank you to our sponsors, Byte Software, Finastra, Lender Homepage, Truve, Angel AI. You can go to getangel.ai. Powerful tool. Also Candid, the Mortgage Bankers Association, Lenders One, and the Mortgage Collaborative at TMC, as we love to know, Mr. Kittle's of the creation. Also Mobility, MMI, Modex, and Knowledge Coup. Good to have you all with us. Have a great week. Be sure to tell others about our podcast. We're here, and we love hearing from you on suggestions of how we can do this better, and also, more importantly, the reports you want us to cover. Have a great week, everybody. See you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending. Our passion is to bring you the latest insights, trends, and updates from the world of mortgages. So on this show, if you're a seasoned industry veteran or just getting started, it's your go-to source for all things mortgage. We hope you've enjoyed the show. If you did, make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, find us on LinkedIn and Twitter at David Lickin, on Facebook at David.Lickin, and on Instagram at DLickin. Take care, and we'll see you next time on Lickin' on Lending.